So I'm coaching basketball again this year for the YMCA, 11 and 12-year-old boys, and we've had three practices, we've had two games, and at the end of the third practice, getting ready for the second game, I, out of habit, just asked the guys to come in, and we all put our hands in the middle of the circle, and I realized right then, with all of their hands stacked on top of each other and mine, we had a problem. We had worked on layups, we'd worked on defense, we'd worked on rebounding, we even have an inbounds pass play, we've worked on passing and pivoting, but guess what? The team doesn't have a name. I said, guys, we need to come up with a name, and fast. I said, how about the Hawks? You know, Atlanta's last place professional team. And it's rare these days, but it was unanimous and bipartisan. No! Okay, how about the Celtics? No. The Bulls, the Lakers, I'm running out of ideas. The Sixers, the Bucks. No. I said, by January, come up with a team name. Okay, team on three. One, two, three, team. Not very inspiring. Joseph and Mary's least problem is what to name their child. They've got other problems, don't they? Troubles like she's pregnant and he's not the father, and they're engaged to be married. Another problem, she's young. She doesn't have much money, not much life experience to draw upon. Problems like the law of Moses says he must dismiss her, and he's decided to do just that. You know, a young, single, pregnant woman with no father in the picture, back then and these days, that sounds like a sure and quick ticket to poverty, doesn't it? There's another problem, but it's not their problem, it's God's problem. If you read the first part of Matthew, which you didn't, it's all the genealogy. From Abraham to King Joseph, all the begats, all the fathers and sons, the mothers, the daughters, all the people to whom this Jesus belongs to, and it's through Joseph. So without Joseph in the picture, Jesus is not connected to royalty and King David and messianic promises. Just when things look the bleakest, I like that hymn that says, in the bleak midwinter, that's when the good news comes. Just when things look as desperate as they're going to be and bleak, that's when the Lord intervenes to change the picture and the future and to make it bright. God's address is not direct address as we talk to each other. God's address is through an angel by means of a dream. I don't know about you, but if I ever hear a voice of the Lord, it tends to come in that kind of watered-down fashion, not voices in my head, not lightning bolts telling me which way to turn next. If I heard voices in my head, I'd call my family doctor and quick. I went to see Act One, performance of the Dickens play, this one a comedy. And in it, you know, it's Jacob Marley, not Bob Marley. It's Jacob Marley who comes back from the grave, and he's in change. And he says to his old partner, Ebenezer Scrooge, Ebenezer, I'm here to warn you, you know, quit being such a, against the spirit of Christmas, and quit being so greedy with your money and not caring about people, etc. And Ebenezer says, well, I hear you and I see you, but how do I know it's really you? Ebenezer says, after all, it could well just be a piece of undigested beef or potato or cheese. Humbug. You know, when Joseph awakens from his dream, I'm glad he didn't say humbug. I'm glad he didn't say, I ate pizza way too late last night. That explains it. He woke up, didn't he? A changed person. And this woman he had planned and decided with resolve to dismiss, he decided to marry. In those days, it meant she moved from her father's house into his house. He also then agreed to do what the angel bid him to do, to name the child. When a father named a child, the father was essentially adopting, claiming that child as his own. And so several crises taken care of there. In a movie, A Beautiful Day, Fred Rogers is having breakfast with a reporter in a Pittsburgh diner. And just before they have the meal, Mr. Rogers says to the reporter, "My wife and I like to do something I'd like for you to do with me right now. Would you do it?" The reporter looks like he wants to say no, but he says, "Okay." Mr. Rogers says, "We like to pause for a minute and think about who are all of the people that have loved us into being." Mr. Rogers begins the exercise, and the reporter looks like the minute can't pass fast enough. After about 30 seconds, the reporter's eyes start to get red, and just before a minute passes, his tears begin to fall. I hardly think he was expecting a word of the Lord at that moment in his broken and painful life. But Mr. Rogers was like the angel in a dream, bringing that word from the Lord that he needed. We all ask it, don't we? What is God's will? What is God's word? What does God want from me? What is God's hope for us or expectation? Are we listening? Are we asking? How do we hear? How do we discern? My friend Joy Fisher works at the Presbytery office in Atlanta, and she wrote a paper about churches and discernment. She says the Greek word for discernment is kia krinos. That means to distinguish, to sort out. We all have distinguishing between this and that, don't we? We all have sorting out to do, don't we? She says to discern faithfully requires relationship, requires waiting, requires listening, requires working together with one another. And I would add this, any discernment that we get, it always must be run by and consistent with the rule of love, because if it's not a word about love, then it's not a word from God. Joseph had made a plan. Joseph had resolve, and it was up to the Lord to change his mind. You know, opinion polls tell us for the most part that nobody in this country, and certainly nobody in Congress, has changed their minds regarding impeachment. Everyone is settled, resolved, determined, committed, such that I think it will be resolved next November. But Joseph does change his mind, doesn't he? It wasn't what he wanted to do. He wasn't looking to change his mind. It came to him when he least expected. Maybe it was just a bit of unboiled potato. I'm guessing he was startled and confused and troubled. I bet he was angry. Why me? Still, it changed him. That nighttime encounter, somehow he awakened with resolve to remain with Mary and to keep and even name the child. Now, most men that I know, I can say this because I are one, they like to make plans and then stick with them. They like to make resolutions, what's the word, and be stubborn about that. Never ask for directions, don't show weakness, never be wishy-washy, never change their mind. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Ever met anybody like that? It's not limited to the male species, but it tends to show up there a little more, I think. All kinds of trouble for Mary and Joseph. And he's resolved, he's committed, he's determined to do what the law of Moses said he should do. Put her away. Least of his worries is what to name the child. But the angel says, "Joseph, you are to keep her as your own. And you're to take the child as your own and name him Jesus." Jesus is from the Hebrew word Joshua. So Jesus is the Joshua of the Old Testament, the Joshua who led the people out of the wilderness and into the Holy Land. It actually means he saves. Salvation, that's what God is in the business of doing in this nighttime dream and in this couple, Joseph and Mary, and in this celebration we call Christmas. God is in the saving business in Jesus. Another gospel, John chapter 3, says, "God sent the Son into the world in order to save the world. There's that word again. God is in the business of saving. Now, the careful reader will notice, well, that's one name Jesus gets in this story, but he gets another. Did you catch it? You shall name him Jesus, which means he saves, and he shall be called Emmanuel, which out of the ancient prophecy means God is with us. The two names that Jesus, Emmanuel, have assure us that God is not a distant being, but one who comes close and dwells with us, even as one of us. And that God is not neutral toward us, but is acting purposely for our good. God coming to be with us. God coming to save us. That's the core of the Christian message, isn't it? The God who loves us is with us to save us. We're not alone, though many people feel lonely. We're not abandoned or without direction, though many seem to have lost their way. We will not be defined by our history or our mistakes or our troubled or our troubles. We will be defined by God's saving activity in our lives. Now, in biblical history, you know, salvation means different things in different times. In the time of, say, Pharaoh and Egypt, when the Israelites were captives and slaves, salvation meant they were freed from slavery. Salvation in the time of King David meant military victory over the Philistines so that they could have their land and their security. Salvation in the time of the Babylonian exile meant being freed out of Babylon and being able to return to their land. What are the pains? What are the hurts of the world today? What is salvation looking like? Where is it most needed these days? Where is salvation, God's redemption, God's loving, healing, saving touch? Where is it most needed in your life? Surely the well-being of the planet is a concern on the list of most of us, if not all of us. Peace and security for the nations of this world, more refugees than ever in human history, displaced people. Clean food, clean water in so many places of the world. This is saving work. Adequate and affordable housing. Access to decent and affordable medical care. A good education to combat ignorance and give opportunity. Freedom from all kinds of bondage. I think of addiction these days of many kinds, but freedom from all kinds of bondage. Friendship and community. Health, among those many other things that you would name as being needful when it comes to God's saving work. We long for that salvation to come and inhabit and transform our world for the better. No matter the age, no matter the circumstance, historically, there are crises and troubles in the world. But we have a name to call upon. We have a name to call upon for God's help. The angelic word really is all we need to hear if you dare to dream and trust that dream. Name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sin. Call him Emmanuel, because he is God with us, always and forever acting for our good. And so the hymn. Good Christian friends, rejoice in heart and soul and voice. Now you need not fear the grave. Jesus Christ was born to save. He has opened heaven's door. We are blessed forevermore. Christ was born for this. Christ was born to save. Amen.